The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll.
Yeah, guess what? It's Friday!
It's
the remedy for boredom has arrived. This is the People's Podcast. Let's go for a ride.
Well, he's got gold chains and hair like a dream. He's definitely the coolest on the whole A-team. There's just one question, where is he from? Chris Jericho invented Mr. T's mom.
Remember, no matter whatever ails ya, that Chris Jericho invented Mr. T's mom. And I put some cowbell in there for you, because I know you want to hear it. Today, got another great show. Aren't they all great? Huh? Aren't they all amazing? I'm still laughing over the ridiculous Sebastian Bach interview that came out on Wednesday. If you haven't heard it, you got to check it out. Sebastian, one of my favorite interviews of all time. So funny, so natural, just a very, very cool guy. Lots of great stories. We had a BLAST blast. We had a blast. And today, we got the King of Swing from Switzerland. We have the Paul Heyman guy himself. Cesaro is here. He does not have a first name. He is just Cesaro, and he's on fire! He'll be in a little bit, but before we get started, thanks for showing my sponsors a little bit of respect and love and affection. I appreciate all of you who have gone to podcastone.com and clicked on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. It's the easiest way for you to find all the great sexy beast sponsors who make this show possible twice a week. You'll also find the Amazon links there for Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, Amazon USA. Everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. In all seriousness, it actually does take some cash to keep this show recorded and produced for you twice a week. And I love doing it. It's become part of my DNA. I'm addicted. I'm a junkie. I'm a podcast junkie. And I want to keep doing it. I want to keep doing it for you for free. So again, please just take a moment to check out the sponsors. I choose them all. They're all great products I use and think you will dig as well. I wouldn't push a bum steer on you, hey? So you can find them all at podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then you click on Talk Is Jericho, scroll through and check them all out and see what's going on there in Sponsorship Town. Bring it on down to Sponsorship Town. All right. So we have Cesaro coming up, and at the end of the show, I'm going to play Lights Go Out. It's just taken off huge on the first day. It was number 3 on the metal charts in Australia. It was number 1 in the metal charts in the UK, and it was the number 1 most downloaded song for Century Media, our record company, on the day it came out in the USA. And it would have been number 1 on the metal charts, but there was some kind of a mess up in the description of the song. So it was never charted in metal, but it sold enough downloads to be number 1 in the metal charts as well. So I'm taking it. Number 1 in the UK, number 1 in the USA, and number 1 in our hearts, right? Number 1 in our hearts. So Big weekend coming up. We are going to be, Fozzie that is, at Carolina Rebellion on April 3rd. If you like the song Lights Go Out, A, you need to go to iTunes and buy it now. Support your favorite bands. That's the only way we can stay on the road and stay rocking. And we're going to be playing it live for you May 3rd, Carolina Rebellion, which is over in Charlotte. May 5th, we're at Springfield, Virginia, very close to the Washington, D.C. area. That's going to be at the Empire with Raven, new wave of British heavy metal metal legends that we invited to come play the show, come open up for us. Very, very excited about that. That's May 5th in Springfield. May 6th in Pittsburgh at the Altar Bar with Buck Cherry. May 7th at the Chameleon Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania with Gemini Syndrome, Eyes Set to Kill. May 8th, the Main Street Armory in Rochester. That's also with Buck Cherry and Adelita's Way. May 9th at the Chance in Poughkeepsie. That's with Josta and King. Cool bands there. May 10th, Hampton Beach Casino in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire with Buck Cherry. May 11th in Clifton, New Jersey. And May 13th at the Irving Plaza in New York City, also with Buck Cherry. So there's a lot of cool shows coming up. If you want to come see Fozzie, if you want to come hang out with Chris Jericho, all information at FozzieRock.com. Plus, on June 12th and June 15th, it's London is Jericho in London, England at Leicester Square. Amazing theater. I will be doing a spoken word question and answer show just for you guys in the London area in the UK. Come and hang out. The tickets are moving really well. I think they're getting close to being sold out. So keep your eyes on that and check it out. Come ask me any questions that you want to. And then plus, of course, on June 14th, main stage at Download, Fozzie will be there along with Linkin Park and Fall Out Boy and I think Twisted Sister and Status Quo, Dying Fetus will be there. That should have been on my list of bad names as well, Dying Fetus. I had a couple of tweets from other people talking about the strange, weird band names that I brought up. Two of the biggest ones, which I forgot, Leonard Skinner. That's an amazing one that if you obviously don't know what you're talking about, makes no sense. It's just part of the culture now. And of course, Pink Floyd is another one. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I'm sure when they first said their name was Pink Floyd, people were like, what does that mean? Also, we have Blue Oyster Cult, the Goo Goo Dolls, Papa Roach, Puddle of Mud, Weezer, all of those strange names as well. And that's thanks to at KGN067, Keegan Duda sent me all those bad, weird band names. So, another thing about this weekend, not only are we doing Carolina Rebellion on the Saturday, but on Sunday, it is Extreme Rules, the WWE's new pay-per-view. And it was a huge, huge success when I had this next guest on to give his WrestleMania predictions. So right here, right now in the studio with me to give his Extreme Rules predictions is Egypt, the janitor from Westwood Collegiate in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, represent, who put a halt to the very first Pummel Mania. He stopped the very first Pummel Mania, BTWF Super Show, back in 1987 or 88. Kind of made a little bit of a truce. And now he's on as my partner in predicting the matches for Extreme Rules. How are you doing today, Egypt?
I have come from the streets of San Francisco. And I am excited to do the Extreme Rules predictions for you.
Well, Egypt, I noticed at the end there you kind of lost your grip on the English language. I mean, that's why we always called you Egypt, because we could really never understand what you were saying. I mean, what kind of an accent do you have?
Well, my accent is for half France, half Nepal, half Newfoundland, and half Jersey City, Aklim, Ohio.
Okay, well, that's actually equals two, so four halves would be two, so you must have had four parents, and I don't want to get into that, but I do want to get into the predictions for Extreme Rules. Let's start it off with the Hornswoggle versus El Torito in the WELC match. And this took me a couple seconds to figure out what that meant. I thought it was WEELC, and I thought, did they mess up on the W? Is it supposed to be WWELC? Then I realized WELC take off for TLC, a TLC match for little people. Definitely for fans of Lucha Libre and comedy. So I'm going to say that I'm going to give it to El Torito. He's new on the scene. And Hornswoggle's kind of been around for a long time. So I'm going with El Torito.
Well, I think that the winner will be Hornswoggle. Because he has the experience and the fan following to be the winner. Plus, he is doing a movie coming out very soon called Leprechaun Hachilak Baharial 2. So they're going to want to promote him.
Okay, next, it's a three-way, basically for nothing. Cesaro versus RVD versus Jack Swagger. I think Cesaro is going to win this and move on to bigger and better things. Definitely a little bit of busy work. And a three-way dance with nothing at stake seems kind of strange, but I'm going Cesaro. Egypt?
I agree with you. As much as it pains me to say this, I do not want to agree with Chris Jericho. But when I was on the streets of San Francisco, I realized that Cesaro is a future world champion.
Okay, so we agree on that one, for those of you keeping score at home. Next is Alexander Rusev versus R-Truth and Xavier Woods. I mean, there's no way Rusev's going to lose this one. Truth and Woods basically not doing much on the show. So I think that it's a no-brainer.
Of course it's a no-brainer. There's no way that the Truth and Woods are going to win. I'm going with Rusev and keep the youth movement going.
Okay, speaking of youth movement, for the Intercontinental Championship, it's Big E versus Bad News Barrett. I'm definitely going with Barrett on this one. I mean, he's got a lot of steam, and Big E doesn't even hardly have anything.
I think Big E is going to make a little comeback here. Big E stands for Big Explosion. As in the explosion he's going to give Bad News Barrett when he jumps off the top rope and gives him a top rope splash.
Well, that was exactly what I was trying to give the Wild Warden when I was climbed up the ladder to jump off at Pummel Mania, but I'm not going to... I'm not going to get into that right now with you, Egypt. Okay, let's go to Paige versus Tamina. Definitely Paige.
Of course it's going to be Paige. It's just busy work for her right now. Paige is the new top star in the Divas division.
Okay, next, John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. WrestleMania rematch. I believe this is a cage match. I think that Bray Wyatt's going to get his victory today. At Extreme Rules. He didn't win at WrestleMania, but he's on a roll once again, and I think it's Wyatt over Cena.
I don't agree with you. John Cena is a hero to the fans. John Cena is a hero to the ladies. John Cena is a hero to Egypt. I am voting for Akindak Mikwakanyakudakra. John Cena.
Okay, let's go to Evolution versus The Shield. You're getting a little bit red there, Egypt.
I have some problems with my blood pressure.
I can tell. You better take it easy. Evolution versus The Shield. You know, the reunion of Triple H and his lackeys, shall we say, which is funny since they're in the main event of WrestleMania. Now they're the lackeys for Triple H. But I'm going to say that Evolution's going to win. I think Evolution's going to get the victory here and continue the feud. How about you, Egypt?
I think that The Shield will win. They are on such a roll right now. And Roman Reigns is good. Dean is good. And Seth Rollins is good.
Egypt, you don't know what Dean's last name is, do you?
No.
It's actually Ambrose.
Oh, Ambrose is my mother's name. I love Ambrose.
Okay, Egypt. And finally, the main event, Daniel Bryan versus Kane. I mean, you have to think that Daniel Bryan is going to get in this. I'm not really too happy with the storyline involving Daniel Bryan's wife and Stephanie and all that stuff, but I think when it comes down to it, it's pretty obvious that Daniel Bryan's going to win.
I agree, but I think Daniel Bryan will win by disqualification. I think that Daniel Bryan will win by disqualification because Kane is hot right now too, and they cannot have him lose right away. So I am going for Daniel Bryan by disqualification.
All right, well, I think just for the record, Daniel Bryan is going to pin Kane clean. But Egypt, we thank you for joining us here on Talk is Jericho. And for those of you keeping track at home, I believe you were 4-for-4 for WrestleMania. So let's see if you can do better. Anything coming up, Egypt, that we can plug?
Well, of course, I will be cleaning the floors at the Peoria Abraham Lincoln High School from May 31st to June 12th, and I will be appearing live at Carolina's in New York City for my debut stand-up comedy performance. So come and see me there.
All right, thanks to Egypt for his predictions. Keep your eye on the Twitter, at TalkIsJericho.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, here we are actually in between Tampa and Orlando in the illustrious Haines City Hampton Inn. I'm sitting here with Cesaro, is right across the table from me.
It's
good to have you, man. It's funny because you, much like Batista, you lost your first name.
Much like Batista, yes. Yeah, he did lose my first name, and like Big E as well.
Big E, that's right. Like, he lost his last name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're just Cesaro. I can't even call you. You're like Cher or Bono. Just one name
Madonna,
necessary,
right?
Or Madonna. That's great. Well, it's cool to have you here, man. And it's. I almost feel like we're having an affair or something because we met at an undisclosed hotel room in between both of our cities.
It seems like we're going to an indie show, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, who is there? Chris is there. Okay, I'll meet up with him because he's the only one I know.
Yeah, exactly. I'll come pick you up at the airport and we'll go, brother. So I know you just landed. You just finished TV this week. You just came from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I mean, how was that? I don't think I've ever been to Saudi Arabia before.
It was really cool because we get there, and we've been. I was lucky enough to be on pretty much all international tours last year. So I went to Qatar and to Abu Dhabi, and that was pretty sweet because in Abu Dhabi we were like jet skiing in the Arabian Gulf.
Oh yeah,
just like it was awesome. And because like Abu Dhabi is trying to be the new entertainment capital of the world, I guess, and Qatar is trying to do the same thing because I guess they realize they're gonna run out of oil, you know, in 2030 or something. So,
right.
But Saudi Arabia is like the most conservative still out of all the Arabian countries.
Okay.
But it's the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the first Western big entertainment company that went there. And especially in the capital, which was Riyadh, which where we're at, they said they never had anything like that. And I heard like different stories of like that was the first time that loud music was played in a public setting in like
no kidding
like I don't know if it was ever but like in a long time like our entrance musics and stuff and it was just like I didn't really realize it but you know when I talked to our like media people and the PR people they were like no this is a really big thing and everybody's like super excited because it's the first time a Western company because usually it's like right before whatever the concert or whatever is supposed to happen, somebody is like not happy with it because you know they're very, very strict in their rules. But I think it's a very good business card for WWE that we were able to do the shows in that country. So like now all the other conservative countries or the countries who are more conservative are worried about, you know, the WWE edge or direction. It's like no, we're PG, we're a family company, and it's great entertainment. So
it's interesting too. I mean, you think about, I mean, all the shows that we do in the States, you know, it's every week, twice a week, and then there's Canadian shows, etc. But just the places that WWE goes, like you mentioned, Saudi Arabia. A few years ago, we went to China. I don't know if you've been on that one, but same thing. There was the first. It was like a world expo, and only American or Western acts was us and like the London Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah,
for the first time ever.
It is very interesting too because. Who was I talking about? Probably Daniel Bryan because we always talk about weird stuff at airports. We were like traveling and you know there's always people recognizing you at airports. And it's no matter where you are in the world.
Right.
So it's kind of, we're not the number one, like you know if you come to the USA there's like NFL. It's like that's the big league.
Yeah.
And then there's, depending on who you talk to, you know, baseball, basketball and hockey is, you know,
right,
somewhere the second. But then there's pretty soon there's WWE and same in other countries, you know, probably like football or soccer, as you know, we call it over here, is like number one.
Somebody just tried to break into our room.
Attack us here.
Hold on a second, let's see what's going on. Hello, We don't need any maid service.
That was way too violent.
See what happens? Maid. Yeah, the guy just tried to just bust into the door here, man. You got the wrong room if he's trying to steal something, man. Yeah. And we could, the best thing is we'd get it all on tape. We'd have it all recorded and be on the podcast. All right, I think we're all right. So you guys were, you're talking about...
What are you talking about? It's just to be like... WWE is so recognizable worldwide. We're not the number one in a country, but we're always like a number two, a number three, a number four.
And it's everywhere.
Like, and everywhere. And yeah. Like, I'm sure you like get recognized everywhere because it's like, oh, wait, it's, people know WWE.
Sure.
And
I mean,
it's just I'll get a worldwide.
I'll get a text sometimes from like, you know, friends and bands. It's like, hey, we're at an airport in Thailand and you're on TV right now or whatever. You don't even realize the worldwide exposure that you're getting.
Exactly. And we always get those, I mean, you know, those. It's like on the sheet, like, okay, going to Saudi Arabia, you know, population. So this is the capital. Like, these are the, you know, like, this,
yeah,
you say hello, just like kind of like familiarize you with the country.
Yeah, when you go overseas, they give you a little booklet that gives you a little bit of information about every country that you go to.
Every country, which I think is very neat, you know, because you learn something. And then it's always like shows you what TV stations and what programs are on. In the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, and like Dubai and Qatar, every show that WWE has is on. It's Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, NXT. Mm-hmm. There's Afterburn. There's This Week in WWE. There's like
even shows just, that are only online here,
exactly, like
are on TV there.
They're all on TV. Yeah. And, you know, we're at the gym and, you know, like there's a 30-minute special on Kofi's promo tour that he did. That's just on TV.
Wow.
That just keeps airing and airing. And it's just, it was very like special them that we went there and all the people were super nice. Like, mm-hmm, they were just stoked, and apparently even the people who were critical about, you know, the event coming, and they came and watched, you know, like with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, they were just like, they were like, well, everybody, they were so surprised and so happy because they said everybody left the show, which is such a good mood, mm-hmm, which is, mm-hmm, that's what we do, you know. So that was very good feedback for everybody, I thought.
And I remember too, I think with Saudi Arabia is the same, might even be worse, was like people are still wearing like the burqas, you know, the full outfits. And for I wrestled or teamed with R-Truth, and he came to the ring saying, "What's up?" And then people say, "What's up?" But they're all wearing burqas. You could just see their eyes, but they're raising the roof. "What's up?"
Yeah.
"What's up?" And it's like something out of like the Naked Gun or something. Like, it's just so out of place.
It's very surreal too, because in Saudi Arabia, there was no women at the shows because, like,
oh, really?
Yeah, there was like none at all. Like, because I think in Qatar or Abu Dhabi, even there were like women and men were at the shows. It's just, you know, women wore the burqas, but Saudi Arabia, it's very strict still. So there's no, mm-hmm, you know, it's just men only shows. So
wow,
it was
that's
very interesting. But the crowd, they were super hot, mm-hmm, and it was actually I thought it was funny. It was a Japanese style arena where it was very intimate. The roof was very low, so it was a great atmosphere.
Yeah, that's great, man.
It was fun.
It's things have been going really good for you over the last little bit in the WWE, and it was kind of a, not a slow start, but you had the typical kind of absorption process when you first came into the WWE. It happened to me, it happened to Eddie Guerrero, it happened to Steve Austin, where you come into the company and you have a big name from another world, but it almost doesn't matter. It's like until you walk through the curtain of the WWE, that's all that matters. That's all that matters to the boss of what you're doing in the WWE arenas. And it doesn't matter what your reputation is preceding you.
Well, I think it's also with the crowd, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of going into a new territory when you go to Japan for the first time or to Mexico for the first time. The people don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with, for example, my style, it takes a while to like appreciate it or get used to it. So
there's an adjustment period.
There's
too.
An adjustment period, and there's an adjustment period for me, mm-hmm, to learn, because like people are always like, "Well, what is this style different?" And I'm like, "Well, it's just a different territory, essentially.
That's
or it's a different country, because, you know, like when you go to Japan, yes, you do exactly what you did to get there, but then you learn and you get better, and that's the. To me, that's a lot of what is fun about it.
But that's also what you have that a lot of guys don't have, the experience of knowing when you go to a different country, it's a different style. Like the basic is the basic, good guys, bad guys. But like I remember like when I went to Mexico, okay, it's more cartoon over the top. When I went to Japan, it's more serious.
Mm-hmm.
ECW was more wrestling, hardcore violence, and mm-hmm, Smoky Mountain was more Gaga. But there is a WWE style, the mythical WWE style.
Well, yeah, it's just, but like, people always ask me, what's the WWE style? I'm like, well, it's, you can't put your finger, it's just like, it's, mm-hmm, so much bigger, but it's also just a different style. Like
it's more psychology, else. Maybe.
It's just you first. You're wrestling for a different audience too. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's families. You know, but it's kids and their dads, so mm-hmm. it has to mm-hmm. appeal everybody. And then I think it's just that adjustment period of, you know, when you watch WWE, there's people that have been there for 10 to 15 to sometimes, you know what I mean? Like
20 years.
20 yeah. years. So people are accustomed to those superstars. So if someone new comes in, it's just like, oh, there's a new guy. And if you watch how many new people show up on WWE television every year, it's quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and people are just like, well, they come and they go. But if the guy sticks around and continues to like impress the audience,
yeah.
they'll start to appreciate him. And it's just, that's just, to me, the natural process. Well, it takes a while.
And let's be honest, too. We're basically working for an audience of one. You have to impress the boss. You got to impress Vince. That's the guy that you really have to prove yourself to when you get there. I mean, I noticed that, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that's how it is in almost every job. You want to impress
the boss. Yeah. You know?
And then, of course, but it's very... you know, you want to impress the boss. You want to deliver good matches for, mm-hmm. for you and the crowd. Mm-hmm. And because it's also if you impress the crowd, you impress the boss. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's kind of, it all goes hand in hand yes. to me. So
it's also a confidence thing too. Like I noticed, and from being through it, and like I said, coming through the same, coming into the business the same way you did. I mean, obviously, I'm came in a couple of years before you did, probably 10 years before, but it was the same concept. Let's go work around the world, mm-hmm. hone your skills. But I knew it from the start. When Punk came in, when Daniel Bryan came in, when you came in, I knew you guys would get over. Even at first, it took a while, but I knew it because you guys knew how to get over, whether it's in, you know, they used to call ECW Arena Bingo Hall. Don't matter. If you get over in the Bingo Hall and you're one of the top guys in that Bingo Hall, you can be one of the top guys in a WrestleMania stadium. You just have to figure out what to do.
Yeah, it's something, you wrote it in your book. I think, I don't know if it was the first or second, I think it was the first, where it was like, well, when you learn how to get over.
That's right.
When you go into different territories or like, you know, travel around the world mm-hmm. and nobody can take that from you.
Yes.
And that's something that you have that's an advantage because you just know, okay, I'll adapt and change until I find what works.
Yeah.
When I went to Japan, you know, I did a couple of tours and the first and second tour, I just looked back and I'm like, what was I doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of like, oh God, I wish I would have just, and then, you know, like I think it was on my last tour, it finally clicked. But uh-huh. Clicked. And now I look back, I'm like, oh. Well,
yeah, sometimes you look back
better, at better, you know?
I remember there was a match I had in ECW. It was a four-way, me versus Scorpio versus Shane Douglas versus Pitbull. And it was voted like match of the year in ECW. And I watch it back now. I can't even watch 10 minutes of it. Like, it's so bad. But for the time and for the style of where we were,
yeah.
it was good.
Yeah,
but knowing what I know now, it's cringeworthy.
Oh, I have many of those, but I think that's what drives us to, you know, mm-hmm. you get better because you look at matches like, oh, you know, I need to be better at this, this, and this, and then you go out and you get better at this, this, and this, and I think
yeah.
that's how you know, like adapt to whatever style you go mm-hmm. to. You know, like to me, the people always that's another question. It's what is the Ring of Honor style? Do a Ring of Honor style match or mm-hmm. like. To me, what Ring of Honor, you can go and it was the same in ECW too.
Right,
like
sure it
ECW
was.
ECW and Ring of Honor have strong similarities to me, and probably like, you know, when you and your group of
mm-hmm,
like
group of guys,
group
yeah,
of guys broke into me and my group.
That's
of
true,
guys,
yeah.
And it's like there's no style. As long as you do whatever you do well, the fans will appreciate it. Because if you look at ECW, there was, you know, from the hardcore guys to the technical guys to the entertaining guys,
everything,
as long as you did it well.
Yes.
It was the same with Ring of Honor. It was everything from top to bottom. You had the guys who did hardcore. You had the guys who did funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you do it well, the fans appreciate it. And I feel like it's the same at a WWE level where you have all kinds of different characters. But as long as you do it well, the crowd will appreciate it. You just have to win them over and show
yeah.
them that, okay, I'm willing to stick around and I'm doing my best every single night at what I do.
And get the confidence to know, like, once you get to that point, like, I could have a match with the hotel desk clerk. I know it's going to be good. Like, just let me just go through it. Once you got that confidence, nothing can touch you.
Yeah. It is a big confidence thing that, you know, like, once you get in the ring, it's kind of your safe zone. You know what I mean? To me, it's like I've been in so many rings around the world. It's like, okay, when I'm in the ring, okay, I know I have stuff under control. What's going on here? I think that is very important.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I was like, when you first started coming into the WWE, you had a great air of respect, which is always cool because obviously you'd been around. And not that some guys just don't know. You know, they come across a little bit arrogant or flippant or know-it-all, and you never would want to say that, but it's like, this guy don't get it, man.
Well, the thing is, too, there's not a lot of... And I noticed that when I was on the Indies, and especially when I started in Europe, there was nobody around to learn from, really. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of guys who said that. There was actually one guy, I think they had like one of my first 10 matches, I was teaming with him, and he told me all how he was in ECW, and he taught Sabu how to do a moonsault or something. And I was just sitting there like,
what are you talking about?
Of course.
That's
bullshit.
Yeah,
yeah. And then it was just like stuff. There was like nobody really around. And then we were on the, like on the Indies, and even, you know, it was like, it was very seldom a show where there was a veteran there that would be like, well, this is how it is, or listen, kid.
You need to try this or try that.
It was all trial and error and kind of almost the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
Trying to find, okay, what works. And then you come to WWE and there's so many people you can ask from the agents, the people who have been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's like, to me, that was very refreshing. And that's like, well, I want to go to WWE because I want to learn more and just have that wealth of knowledge,
yeah,
you know, to learn from. You know what I mean? I can come back and like when I wrestled you for the first time, you know, like you give me some pointers, or I come back and there's like Pat Patterson, or you know what I mean? It's just like,
and those guys are willing to give you as much information as you want, but a lot of people don't ask. It's really amazing that a lot of guys, maybe they don't feel it's their place, or maybe they don't want. I don't know, but if you don't ask, it's almost a black mark against you. And when you do ask, guys are like, you know, this guy really wants to learn.
Yeah, and the thing, it also is like some people just, like you said, they don't know because they come from different backgrounds where it completely works different, and you can't really hold it against them. And if they stick around and if they're successful, they'll pick up on how it works.
That's right.
So it is very interesting because there's all kinds of different people, and that's the beauty about this business. Mm-hmm. About WWE, you just, there's different people from all different walks of life, and they have one passion.
A lot of different ways to kind of get there.
Exactly.
I remember we did the Japanese tour last year, and I think I told you, but I requested to work with you. Because, and nothing against the guy, I mean, good guy, but I was just envisioning, okay, we're going to go to Japan, and I'm going to get put in there with like Fandango or something, and that's fine, we'll have an okay match, but I want to go and tear it up. Like, I grew up in Japan. You know, I've been there 60 times. I wanted to go with someone that could go. And I said, you know, I said to Michael Hayes, I want to go with Cesaro. And he's like, all right, you can go with him if you want to. And because this was another Cesaro. It was a year ago. You still had a first name then.
Yeah, but
you were kind of lower on the food chain. But that, like, I knew that you would get there. And we went to Japan. We were in Tokyo at the Sumo Palace. And, man, I remember we went about 30 minutes, and we tore it up. And I was just I just thought it was such a great match for both of us to really – you know, we talk about Japanese style. What does that mean? More athletic style, longer false finishes, and more crunchy, hard-hitting. I thought that was a great match that we had.
Yeah, and it was awesome because, like you said, there was a different time, and you were like, oh, I requested, you know, like, to wrestle you over there. And I was like, oh, okay, sweet. So, like,
sure.
It was like, pressure's on, but sweet. I love pressure. So, like, let's go, you know. And like I said, Japan is something that I looked up to, and I really wanted to go to Japan before I came to WWE. And to go there and be like, okay, look, we can do this too.
You know?
Like,
that's right.
And especially with you've been there, and the crowd gave you an awesome reaction. And I felt like, all right, I'm going to earn it. You know, so that was one of my favorite matches like so far. It was just different and, you know, like long and fun.
And you got to open up and really, you know.
It was kind of like one of those like, all right, let's just.
I just remember, I mean, and obviously people know it now, and we hadn't. You hadn't become the King of Swing at that point, which I don't think I could ever take that move because I get too dizzy and actually literally throw up. But you just
used to do it. Though.
I used to do it. I got it from Hiro Hase.
He used to do it.
So I did it a couple times with Eddie and X-Pac. So he was good, man. People used to count one, two. But I remember just how strong you are. I mean, you got this guttural, just bullish strength, man. I mean, it's a definite asset for you.
Yeah, it definitely is, and it's like something when I on one of my last tours in Japan, I just started doing more power stuff, and Japanese fans really responded mm-hmm. to it. I think I remember the first night I just shoot gorilla pressed one of their guys, and he was like, you know, like 110 kilo guy.
Yeah.
He was like, there's this awesome picture of him, like not posted, just like with the face of like, what the hell is going on? But it's just, to me, it's always like, you know, people are like, oh, how much do you bench and stuff? Mm-hmm. And to me, I don't care.
That's useless.
That's useless. What matters to me is what you can do in the ring, you know,
yeah.
like manipulating body weight is completely different from manipulating like
weight, you know? Yeah, exactly.
So, like, there are so many guys that, you know, when you're in the ring with, they just grab you and you're like, whoa,
mm-hmm.
like he's strong. And then you see somebody that's like, you know, like bodybuilder type strength, and he's just like,
I remember Haku Ming was yeah. like that, just had this guy could kill me if he wants. Big Show's like that too. I mean, you forget because you know, Big Show's so nice, but that guy and you, they got this strength of just like this. It's like a shark under the waves. Like I could just die right now.
Yeah, like definitely Big Show when he grabs you. Or like,
yeah,
for example, like Mark Henry, he is the world's strongest man.
Right,
which people I don't know how you can forget, but like, his grip is it's insane.
Well, because we know these guys. That's why, and they're so nice and sweet, and you can tell them to F off and they laugh at you, but you forget. I mean, I saw a picture of me and Big Show the other day, and it's like, he's literally another me on top of me. Yeah. Like, how, like, you forget, you know? Yeah. But speaking of which, I mean, I remember I came back from Japan, and I told Vince, you know, how was the tour? I said, it was great. I mean, because I worked with Joe, Curtis Axel too. Axel was great. I said, but Cesaro, man, keep your eye on him. He's like, I will. I'll keep an eye on him. And here we are a year later, and you won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal,
yeah.
which at first when you hear it, it's like, oh, it's probably just a way just to get everyone on the show. But it wasn't. It was
really
legitimately
good.
Pushed part of the show. And the end of it was really good. And I thought that when you won, it was like, oh, that's the guy.
It was it was very surreal,
mm-hmm.
to say the least. And I thought, you know, Andre the Giant was he was from Europe.
Yeah, so yeah, that's right.
I kind of have that connection with mm-hmm. him. And it's interesting. One of the only other Swiss wrestlers I know was Rene La Sartesse.
Yes,
which is the guy. Who
I'm
going to
talk about him.
Germany,
that's right.
Right.
I worked for him in Switzerland or in Germany.
Yeah, Germany.
Yeah, in '93.
When I met him, he was like, I talked to him before, like a year ago, 2 years ago on the phone.
And he's still alive, right?
And he was still alive.
Yeah.
He lost a leg in a motorcycle accident.
That's right.
Still alive, still strong. And it was funny because I called him and it was very awkward because I haven't talked to him in years at that point.
And why did you call him?
Because we had a show in Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
And I just wanted to invite him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, that courtesy I felt like I owed him to.
Yes.
Just be like, hey, if you want to, you mm-hmm. can, which is an hour from him, which is in Switzerland, that's actually quite a long travel distance. And, you know, with him being that old, and it just, it did not work out. But the first question he asked me, which was phenomenal, and it just shows you what kind of guy he is. It was like the first he asked me, when he saw me first, he was like, how much do you weigh now? And he goes like, first time I met him, he told me, he was like, you know, you need to be like 105. Like, he told me I need to be 110 kilos.
Right, which is about 230 or so,
like,
240?
240,
yeah.
250, which right now I'm around 105.
Okay.
And I'm feeling great. So
yeah, and stay there.
I went there to 110 and I was like, not quite for
not
me,
necessary either, right?
Yeah, but he was, he told me the story about how he booked you with the picture. And,
me?
And,
oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and like, and how his daughter liked you. And then, like, I was just like, you know, old-timers talk a lot sometimes, and you mm. don't know what's true or not. But then, like, he had the picture and everything, and then I read the same story in your book.
It's true.
And he was the one that told me that he found Andre in France.
Mm.
He discovered him, which many people say they discovered Andre, but he was telling me how they had, like, handicap matches with him and this and that, and how he would fly him around in his private airplane. And
wow.
So, like, I figured, like, I had not a connection to Andre, but I was like, okay, because he only told me the truth about other things, you know,
so
like,
chances are he's probably something, yeah.
Something true that he was, yeah. you know, one of the first ones that
that's right.
promoted him or whatever. So that was pretty cool. And then to win the you know, the Giant Memorial Battle Royal was at my first WrestleMania, you know, like,
yeah.
On WrestleMania, the first time. That was pretty surreal. So,
well, and also, too, cool. And this is another thing that you might not have even thought about, but Andre the Giant holds a special place, not just in the fans, but to Vince McMahon. Like, mm-hmm. Andre is one of his all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah.
So to win the Andre the Giant battle, it wasn't just I just had this guy go over. Like, the fact it's called the Andre the Giant battle royal means that it means a lot to Vince. And the fact that you won it, that's a big vote of confidence.
Oh, you know, it definitely was. And you know, I was very proud of it. And mm-hmm. it's always, it's kind of funny because that's always in every step of your career. or at least at guys like us, it feels like, okay, now the hard work begins.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's always like you go to the next step and it's always like, okay, you need to get better, better, more and more. And
right.
Like, and that's not like, oh no, I want more, but it's not like, okay, now it's time to always deliver. And I feel like that's like, you always want to do that. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't, but it's like,
no, no, yeah,
you just have to work harder.
Well, it's a different, when you start getting the sniff of the main event and you start dipping your toe into that water, it's a different world, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, I always say, how many guys have been in the WWE? I don't know, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000. How many of them have been world champions? 100? How many of them have been good world champions? 40? So it gets whittled down. Yeah. How many of our Hall of Famers? You know, 10? Like a yeah. real legitimate guys. So when you start getting into that rarefied air, like you said, okay, great. You started out, you came in, okay, then you yodeled for a while, you spoke some languages, you had Oksana.
We just talked about that.
Which is great, man. I love it. Well, he's from Switzerland. Make him yodel. What else do they do in Switzerland? But I mean, and then I think when Vince put you with Zeb, that was a big step up because one of the things was, well, he doesn't talk a lot, meaning you. Meanwhile, it's the same with Chris Benoit. He didn't talk either until they found out what exactly he talked best at. Bret Hart. Bret Hart was an over-the-top talker, but when he found his character, mm-hmm. and for you, okay, they put you with Zeb. You get a little bit of chemistry with him, with Swagger, and then suddenly you get moved away from Zeb and given to Paul Heyman, who's mm-hmm. the best mouthpiece for you. And also, you don't just become a Paul Heyman guy as a throwaway in this day and age. That's like another big check mark next to your name.
Definitely, yeah. And I think that with the, you know, it was like I had the WrestleMania moment mm-hmm. and then
the next night,
the
right?
moment yeah. afterwards as well. And that was very, I was very grateful for that. And that was very satisfying, of course. And now it's kind of, okay, let's go.
Yeah, let's see what you got, right?
Yeah.
How did you feel about getting put with Paul?
You know, to me, like I said earlier, it's very, when I started, there was not many people to learn from. And then I go, you know, like I had the chance to learn and like from Zeb
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Dutch, who has mm-hmm. been around.
Dutch Mantel, right.
For
yeah, since the okay. Stone Age.
How do you pronounce it? Decades or decades?
Decades,
okay.
But I'm from Canada, so my pronunciation is all
okay,
messed up too. So
I always spent for four, the newest pause. I'm like, I just don't know how to say decades.
Coming from a guy who speaks five languages, well, yeah, I'm telling you how to speak.
I always ask the mishmash in my head. But so, like, you know, to film, like, being able to learn from him and ride in the car with him and just have, like, road trips and drive up and down the road and him just telling stories or listen to music or whatever it is, you know, it's just such a good learning experience that I've never really had before, because you always hear the stories of, you know, the old-timers in the territories, or they would be like, you know, I learned in the car and, you know.
Well, that's right, yeah.
And it is true because
you're right.
You know, when you drive for 4 hours, yes, there's going to be an hour of quiet time because it's just like in between or listen to music. But a lot of the time you talk about wrestling, you throw ideas out, mm-hmm. you get shut down, you think, oh, this is stupid. Or like you just give a different perspective on things, especially for somebody that's been around for so long like Zeb has, and then to get a chance to work with somebody else that's been around for a while, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like you said, probably the best mouthpiece
in the business
right
yeah.
now, or in the business in general. And then, you know, to learn from him, to me, that's just an awesome opportunity and chance,
and it's going to help your promo abilities too,
definitely, you know? Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and like I said, I mean, when you're talking about Paul Heyman, he's got Brock, who doesn't talk. He was with Punk, who did talk. Mm-hmm. You're kind of in the middle. It's like you can yeah. talk with him a little bit and sit back and listen to him go, and nobody can sell an angle like Paul can. So there's a big future for you just to be associated with him.
He is a great salesman.
Absolutely, yeah. Whether he's telling the truth or not.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
I'm here with Cesaro. So let's go back to your early days. You mentioned growing up in Switzerland. How do you become a wrestling fan in Switzerland? Is there I think I've only been there maybe once or twice. Doesn't seem like it's the hugest thing.
No, it was when was that the wrestling boom in probably would that be like 94, 95. Mm-hmm. which was actually not a Hulkamania boom. It was the when
it was with Bret Hart, maybe Bret right? Hart.
Yeah. It was when with Bret Hart and the Steiners and the Quebecers, and you know, although I always say Steiners and Quebecers in the same line because that was the feud when it came on TV. I think it was on from 10 to 11, which is very late for me to stay up. But you know, once a week, I was.
And where in Switzerland did you grow up?
Lucerne.
Lucerne, gotcha. Yes. Great city.
Yeah,
love it.
Beautiful city.
Yes, I wrote a big story about it in my new book. It's beautiful.
So it was like the new thing, you know. It's like, oh, from, you know, like from America, which is cool, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, WWF at that time, and so I watched it, and the big feud, you know, was obviously Bret Hart, and then but one of the big tag feuds, and I was just a big tag team wrestling fan at that point, was the Steiners against the Quebecers, and I thought that was great, you know. And then, you know, I was a big fan of Papa Shango.
You're the only one, I
well,
think.
Well, you know, because like it was just like he was crazy, and crazy as a completely off the wall character that made
Warrior's
eyes bleed, and would always, I always tell this story, and actually, the German WWE announcer has been with the company for about 25 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since WWE
oh, really?
On German TV, he has been announcing for us. And so I listened to him growing up, and I finally met him, you know, when I went there for promotion tour and stuff. And I was like, you know, one of my favorite things you ever said is that Papa Shango's voodoo only works on WWE superstars that are in the ring. It does not translate to the TV.
What's his name, the guy?
Carson Schaefer.
That's great.
And like, because in Germany, they're very, very strict about, you know, like, what is it called? Like anti-violence laws and stuff like that. So like, they could not talk. He told me at one point when he got on TV, that was later when I got back into it, they were not allowed to talk about the match. They were only allowed to talk about the storylines around it the characters because they didn't want them to promote violence.
Okay.
So it was like, I'm like, that's a really big challenge as an announcer. Like, don't talk about the match. Like don't talk about what happens in the match, just around like...
Yeah, don't promote violence when you're watching the match.
Yeah. And it's like, it's very hard, you know, because obviously wrestling is not something that's you know, like ingrained in the culture like it is here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people, you know, just sometimes throw it away as like, oh, it's just, you know,
just fake or whatever they say. Yeah.
Know? So, but you know, that's how I got into it. And then, you know, with the pictures and the trading cards, and then it kind of got taken off TV. So I kind of forgot about it for a couple of years. Then it got back on TV when I was like 18, 19.
So where did you get started?
That was right. I got started when I was 20 years old.
In Switzerland?
In Germany.
Okay.
Well, I started in Switzerland because that was right when the internet became popular, and it was during the Attitude Era, like right around 2000, when everything started to,
I started in 99, basically, end of 99, yeah.
Yeah, that was like the big, I remember watching it on TV when it was like the big, like, oh, like.
Big Countdown debut.
Yeah, the big Countdown debut. And that was like when just the internet was like, you know, with the dial-up modem. And it was like, you knew it was going to happen. You just didn't really know when.
Yeah.
So like, that's the other thing when with like, the big thing is not sometimes, it's just the anticipation of when it's going to happen. And like, you knew like, oh, Jericho's not, he hasn't been on WWE.
Trying to put two and two together,
When is he going to be on WWE? And then like, it's like, you know, I watched that. And then I found that it was like, couple of guys who founded a wrestling club, which is essentially what you had to be to rent the local gym for a night.
Oh, so you had to have a club.
Yeah, you had to have a club.
Official club.
So like, it was like, oh, you know, wrestling, Swiss Wrestling Federation, you know, like, and it was like an hour from me, and I'm like, oh, that sounds great. I want to try that. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. You know, and I walk in there, and it's just a bunch of guys like me who are trying to, like, you know, try to do what they saw on TV, and then
body slam.
Yeah, like a body slam, and they had like the small thin blue mats, you know. And but there was one guy who came with Dory Funk before, and he's been over to the States like, you know, two or three times, and trained with him, and he wrestled all around Europe, and he kind of knew what he was doing. His name was Siggy the Swiss Tank at that point. And you know, I just kind of like, he showed me like how to do like a headlock, a wrist lock, and a hammer lock. I think that was pretty much
That's it. Right.
And I knew how to bump, which I learned on the thin blue mats, which you learn pretty quick because if you're doing it wrong, you know.
You don't want to take too many.
Exactly. But at that point, I was eager to take a lot of them. I was like, oh, this is great. And then he was kind of like, well, if you want to like be in a ring or train in a ring, you need to come to Germany because there's nothing in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And He was like, well, we're having a show, or I'm founding a promotion, you know, like
whatever it was,
their own promotion.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm starting this new promotion. It's on like Christmas Eve, like, mm-hmm. you know, December 24th, which is like, I guess the only time they can get the building, mm-hmm. whatever. And in Europe, we celebrate Christmas usually on Christmas Eve, not on the Christmas day.
Oh, okay.
So like the 24th is like the big day of Christmas. So, but I was like, well, I'm going to go and train in a ring on Christmas, essentially. And I traveled with him to Germany and trained in the ring, which actually got set up in this death metal club in Essen, Germany.
Oh, nice.
So, which was great, because in the afternoon I set up the ring, trained, and then in the evening it was awesome because I guess some people didn't show up, so I was allowed to have my first match. And then the ring announcer and referee, you know, had... like, what would that be, like 110 degree fever, mm-hmm. and was puking. So I ended up refereeing and ring announcing as well.
Wow, everything.
That same night, yeah.
Who was your first match against?
Siggy the Swiss Tank.
Oh, Siggy the Swiss
course,
Tank.
Yeah.
And you were Claudio Castagnoli?
Yeah, I was Claudio Castagnoli at that time.
So, I mean, I was doing a little research because I'm a pretty responsible journalist now. You got to the States fairly early on, which is interesting because a lot of guys in Europe basically just bop around Europe for, you know, a long time. But you came really early on to the States in your career.
Yeah, I came like about 4.5 years in. And what happened is I came to the States to train a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And like Chris Hero at that time, he was Les Cassius owner of NXT for a bit, was like, hey, why don't you come to the US and, you know.
Was he over in Europe and met you in Europe?
Yeah. Okay. He was, he came to Europe a couple of times and we had like a training camp. And
gotcha.
I just tried to learn from, you know, like anybody. I was like, oh, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, training with him, you know.
Yeah.
And we became kind of friends, you know. And he was like, why don't you, you know, come over here and live over here and be resident? I'm like, well, I need to have a visa. I can't just come over here and be illegal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I found out that there's something called the green card lottery where they give away 100,000 green cards every year. I don't know if that's still the case.
Really?
Yes, they do. And so I was like, all right, how do I apply for it? So I applied for it and I went to like an agency because it's so much paperwork. I didn't.
Well, and I'm sure there's probably like millions of people that want to get one.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I was like, okay, they were like, okay, what we do for you, you know, like you pay a certain amount and then you just submit your name. And your passport or whatever, and then once you get selected, then you fill out the paperwork.
Wow.
Because apparently nobody ever gets selected, so don't even bother with the paperwork.
Yeah.
So I get, you know, I file in, and I think it's like in April or something like that. It's the when they like draw the lottery.
Yeah.
So I get a month later, I get a message like, all right, you got selected for further to the next round. Now you have to fill out the paperwork. And I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess everybody gets selected. But I started putting out my paperwork and everything. And then I talked to some people in the company I work for, and they were like, really? I've been applying for 8 years, and I've never got through, you know? So
it really is like winning the lottery. Like a one in
the lottery. You know. I think I had, they said I had a 1 in 25 chance to get through the first, and then a 1 in 20 to get through on the second round.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's the chances are smaller than that.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
Smaller.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
But, well, so very small percentage. I get through the first, and then it's like, okay, fill out everything, you know, like mother's maiden name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you have to have like certain either a job in the US or money saved up. You need to have like a complete physical with every single thing. And then you have to go, I had to go to the US embassy. Which was awesome because like that was the first time you pull up with your car, you know, and they stop you and they have like the rolling mirror that they look on
the
car and everything, right?
Post 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. They just walk in there and it's like, so they just look at it and they're like, okay, and they just gave it to me and I was like, that was legit. I was like, I drove out of the embassy and I just kind of stopped and I was like looking at my papers and I'm like, is that really it? Like,
and you've got a green card.
Is that I can go now, right? I guess I kind of have to now, you know what I mean? So it was really cool. And then I went to work and I quit the next Monday, which was awesome because I think I was going to get a promotion.
Well, that's I mean, so unbelievable, you know, to talk about fate that you actually get a green card before you even come to the WWE. I mean, that's one of the things that I always had going for me is I was born in the States,
mm-hmm.
but my parents are Canadian, so I grew up in Canada, but I didn't need a visa to come to the States. I could go work wherever I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I know, I mean, you worked every promotion. I mean, the list of your career bio is huge. But I noticed one thing, and I remember this. I don't even think I even met you at the time, but you actually signed a deal with the WWE very early on.
Yeah.
And then it got taken away.
Yeah.
Well, like back in like 05 or 06.
Yeah, that was like right two years after I came over here.
So what happened?
I don't really know.
Hmm.
See, that's the thing. It was I came over here, and it's funny because I didn't come over to the U.S. I wasn't like, I want to be in WWE. I want to be a WWE superstar. I was like, to me, my goal was to become a full-time wrestler. And then the next step, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always was like, okay, it's step by step.
You want to work your way up there.
And then I want to go to Japan. Mm-hmm. I want to go to Mexico and all that stuff. And then finally, there came a point where I was like, I want to go to WWE. That's just the next logical step. What happened is I had a tryout, and I got signed by Nova at that point, who wasn't in charge of talent relations.
Nova was okay. He was in charge of talent relations.
He was
for talent the developmental
relations.
Or
no, I think just talent.
Wow.
Or like development, whatever it was.
He was what was his name? What was his name when he used to drive the little Simon Dean?
Right? Yeah, okay. Simon Dean. And I had my tryout and went well, and I got signed. And then I got back from Europe, from like a tour of Germany and Austria, and I came back, and they released me before I could go to OVW, where I was supposed to report. And it was just something that was like, okay, let's start back up.
Of course. What else can you do?
Yeah, to me, it was like, okay, it was not supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. I never really found out.
So you're talking about like a month or 2 months after? Or how long did you actually have this deal?
I had a deal for a month? Something like that.
Wow. So just really not quick.
Even. Yeah, it was shorter because, you know, they usually want to move pretty quick, but I was just finishing, finishing up, and then I got finished up. but, you know, it was something that I didn't, like, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh,
yeah, man, screw that, right.
What?
These guys are stupid.
I was like, okay. I mean, I was like, I always try to use, if I get frustrated, I always use that as motivation. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, that gives me a chance to continue at Ring of Honor. That gives me a chance to go to Japan, which I did. You know, like, I didn't go to Japan before that. I actually went after that. And then when we had our tryout again in 2011 before we got signed, you know, I asked about that too. I was like, okay, you know, like, you know, I was here before.
I was before.
And, you know, it was just like, yeah, but, you know, like, different times now, you know, everything's different.
For whatever reason, you fell through the cracks. Or...
I never got an explanation that because, like, nobody really, it's just something that fell through the cracks.
Yeah, you know right.
Because, you know, like.
And you never know. It could be something like. You know, we have too many Europeans, or
it could have been.
You just never know,
because,
man.
You know,
yeah,
like there's I think there's three other people got signed with me. Heath Slater is one of the people that signed at the same time, and it could have just been like, you know, like, oh no, we didn't want to sign that guy.
Let's, yeah,
and it's just to me, it's just it happened, and
sure,
like,
and maybe you weren't ready at the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, I'm actually looking back, I'm pretty happy because I probably wasn't ready at that time,
right.
And it would have been too much, you know. And now I felt I had a better grasp. I had a chance to develop further, and it worked out. You know, I have absolutely no gripe.
Well, no, of course. I mean, like you said, we were sitting here right now, but that happened to me in 94. I got offered to come in. They were doing this thing where they had, they were bringing in guys. And I remember Jim Cornette called me. He's like, they're not job guys, but they're guys that have gimmicks, but they're going to lose all the time. And what do you think about being one? And I was like, I don't think so, man. I'm just going to wait until it's my time. And this was like, it was like the Goon. And I think I was earmarked to be the Goon.
Canadian guy, of course,
you know, and
right.
Teal Hopper and all this stuff. But I mean, it just didn't feel right. And I just, I'll just wait for my turn the right way.
Yeah.
You know, but you went on then and you mentioned Chris Hero earlier, and one of the best tag teams from that era. And I watched a lot of the videos, DVDs at the time, was Kings of Wrestling in Ring of Honor. And you guys had some amazing matches. It was a real good crew of guys at that point in time.
It was a really good crew of guys at Ring of Honor at that point, and it was a very strong tag division too. And it was always cool because there would be shows where we would be headlining the shows and the title match would go on before intermission, or vice versa, because it was equal. Like the rivalries we had, the matches we had were great, and some of them were my favorite matches of that time. And you know, I have nothing but good things to say about the time I had there. And you know, like, we had like titles all over the U.S. And
who were some of the guys that you worked with?
We worked with the Briscoes a lot. at that point.
Yeah, well, tell us about those guys. I mean, I met them a couple times and seemed like, you know, nice guys, but I've seen them just do some crazy stuff, like just killing themselves.
Yes.
I mean, they've never signed with TNA or WWE.
No, they never did. They're
just by choice, or
Yeah, I mean, I have to ask them, but they're they're chicken farmers from Delaware, and that's who they are. And I don't say that.
No, that's right.
In the utmost respect, because they're just country boys from Delaware, Sandy Fork, Delaware. They grow chickens for a living. That's what they do, and they're just crazy,
right?
And they're awesome.
Some ridiculous matches. Yeah,
yeah. We had some of the, you know, some. We had like a year long feud with them at Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
It actually ended up in probably one of my favorite matches, which was us, the Kings of Wrestling, me and Chris Hero and our manager Shane Hagedorn against the Briscoes and their dad, which is phenomenal.
Is their dad a worker?
No.
Oh,
it's their dad. It's awesome.
Father chicken farmer.
But it was good, and the crowd was so hot and so into it.
So we're talking about Ring of Honor, not to interrupt you, but I mean, you mentioned how there's kind of similarities between ECW and Ring of Honor. I've never worked for Ring of Honor, but I mean, the ECW was playing decent size arenas, you know, you'd get 1,000 or 1,500 people at the bigger shows, a couple hundred at the smaller shows, but hardcore, diehard fans who knew exactly what you were doing and who really respected the guys in the ring. And also, like, ECW was almost their religion. Like, yeah, we are ECW. Yeah. Is Ring of Honor have that same vibe? Is it the next generation ECW?
Yeah, you know, it was founded by Gabe Sapolsky, mm-hmm, who was mentored by Paul Heyman.
Oh, okay,
you know,
right.
Or like,
I remember him selling programs.
Exactly.
In CW, yeah.
You know, he would do that, and he was just, I think, you know, we're looking for, okay, well, what the next, you know, what can I do? And he started Ring of Honor, and it was based on, you know, like, to me, it was more based on pure on the wrestling, pure product, mm-hmm, kind of like Japanese style, and that's how it grew. And the fans, you know, when I was there, we had shows like from 500 to, like you said, you know, like 2,000 people on the big shows in New York. And mm-hmm, they were like, they knew who everybody were. They loved wrestling. They were super proud of the product. And it was their passion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was I think I heard you say it on one of the previous podcasts, like us against the world.
Right. And
it was it was like, no, we're Ring of Honor and we're wrestling and this is awesome.
Our company's,
you know, this is the best, and we have the best talent. And even to this day, you know, like a lot of the fans, you know, when they come up with the programs assigned at the airport and stuff like that, a lot of them are Ring of Honor fans. A lot of them are just like, I follow you since Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, that's kind of like probably similar to with the, when you started in ECW, it's like they started there, and then they okay.
Oh yeah,
I follow you to WWE, but only because you.
That's right. I was known as the ECW guy. I only worked there for 6 months. I think I had 24 matches in ECW. I was barely there, but still to this day, that's where I started. You know.
Yeah, and it's kind of in Ring of Honor. I worked a little bit longer. I think I worked like 5 or 6 years there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a long time.
But it was a lot of fun because it gave me. I could learn. I can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Still, I think. If you need to make mistakes to get better, and I did many mistakes there, and there's many more.
And not on the national stage, yes, which is good.
So you can learn, you know, and a lot of fun. You can experiment with things. You can see how the crowd reacts,
mm-hmm,
and it's just it was fun. And at its prime, Ring of Honor, we ran three weekends a month.
Wow, so it was pretty full time.
So like, yeah, it was full time. You know, there was, especially once we got TV, which was on HDNet, which, mm-hmm, is, I think, I always say it's the best wrestling show you've never seen, because
that's the truth.
Nobody,
right,
had HDNet, but it was so good. It was well produced. It was like the vignettes and everything was like ahead of its time. And I say that because it was like UFC style sit downs and like in like the gritty area, you know, with like, but it was very well done. And the matches with the stories on TV were great. And it was that was when, Rollins against Daniel Bryan was like headlining all the TV, so you know they had quality there. And
what was Rollins? He was Shane Black or something.
Tyler Black.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And then it was us, Kings of Wrestling. The Briscoes were the American Wolves. There was All That Express with a bunch of tag teams, and we had the good thing going, mm-hmm, on there. So, like I said, it was the best TV show you've ever seen.
Well, I mean, and you mentioned earlier your group of guys. I mean, there's a lot of guys, much like in WWE in 2000, kind of all of us guys from around the world
culminated in WWE. You have the same thing. I mean, you mentioned Daniel Bryan. I know you guys mm-hmm. are buddies, and you mentioned Rollins. Mm-hmm. How many other guys were there in Ring of Honor that are now in WWE? I mean, Punk there at the time, or he already
Punk
left?
Just left, just about as I came in.
Okay,
I did a few shows with him.
Okay,
when he was there. Same with Jamie Noble. He mm. did a few shows.
Right.
Right about when I started, or was yeah. very new. Spanky was just about leaving as I came in.
What about Ambrose? Was he there in
Ambrose,
Ring of Honor?
No. Ambrose was not at Ring of Honor.
Okay.
But I met him on...
Because you worked everywhere else, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I met him the first time, I think it was at a Chikara event, and then I saw him at IWA and everywhere.
So when you were working Ring of Honor, you were allowed to work other companies too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, and I say, oh, yeah, because, you know, some people are like, oh, you work for us, you can't work for them.
Well, yeah, you're right.
Which is, but with us, the lucky thing was we had some kind of leverage that we were like, no. Mm-hmm. To me, it was not like, I was not the guy who, you know, like, has a job and works once a month.
Right, you were working every...
No, this is my thing, and if you're willing to pay me for the dates that I'm not resting for anybody else...
Yes,
I don't do it. If you can't, which you I know you won't,
yeah,
I'll go and wrestle for them. And I did that a few. I was one of the only guys that did Ring of Honor and Evolve after you know, Ring of Honor and Gabe had their falling out. And I'm always
because you're at the level where you could just say, "Listen, I'm doing it,"
but also
deal with it.
To me, it's also a sense of I was also very proud that I was able to do that because. I didn't burn any bridges, I was very open and loyal and honest. I was just like, look, I'm doing this show, and I told him, and I was like, are you fine with that? And just know that if you have a show, I'll do yours because you're
sure
you
take priority.
Priority. And to me, it's all about like not being shady, which is, you know.
Of course. I love the Chikara because it's a little bit of a wacky type of a promotion.
Yes.
And I've had, you mentioned, you listened to my Rey Mysterio show. His one of his original names was the Green Lizard.
Yes.
I had Sabu on the other day, which will air very soon. His original name was Sabu the Elephant Boy.
Yeah.
You were in Chikara with a very interesting ring name. I'll let you say what it was.
Is it the Very Mysterious Ice Cream?
Of course. Very Mysterious Ice Cream. Well, that's a name.
Well, what happened was, see, I had that. Okay, funny thing. I had that name. I didn't even have that name, but I was an ice cream for one show.
So was the ice cream a group of guys or something?
Okay, so what it is.
It was a faction?
Yeah, it's a tag team.
Okay.
Los Ice Creams. Which is Spanish for the ice creams.
Right? That's right, exactly.
And, so Chikara is very fun-oriented. It's like it's its own universe, but the fans are all in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had a construction worker called Shane Storm, which the name was just based on, that was the time in the Indies where everybody was a Shane and everybody had some
storm.
Kind of a storm. So it was like the most generic name you can find.
It's like Shane Johnny storm. Hollywood in the early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, so it's the most generic name you can find and then the most absurd gimmick. So it was Shane Storm who was a construction worker.
Uh-huh.
And he came up with the whole construction worker thing. He had like a mask that has a big blue hair mullet and he had a stop sign, you know, the stop slow sign.
Yeah.
And he would actually slow his opponents down and then stop them. And then like, hit him with an enziguri or something, and it was completely okay with the crowd because everybody was in on it.
Right, you know, it's like going to a lucha show and the guy would like do a little jump and everyone would jump with him. Yeah,
yeah, it's just like, you know, and there was Lance Steele. It's another generic name, but he was a knight.
It was Lance Storm, so Lance is right in the middle of that.
But you know,
Lance Steele was a knight.
Lance Steele was a knight. You know, so like he had the big knight and everything. So. You know, there's a tag team called Los Ice Creams, and they wear ice cream masks. One has an ice cream cone as a beard, and I think they're all just like sticking right out of his head. And, you know, they come out to ice cream music, and they do...
ice cream music.
Well, you know, the ice cream truck.
The ice cream truck.
Exactly, yeah. And to me, that was extra funny because in Switzerland, we don't have ice cream trucks.
Oh, wow.
So, like, and the first time I actually heard one over here, I was like,
whoa, ice cream
truck. So they come out to ice cream music, and they do, you know, like... funny, ha ha,
yeah.
Stick, like the lucha thing, you know, where you like walk around the guy and pinch him in the butt, you know, like
hey,
La Parca stuff,
right?
You know? And there was an angle where I either got taken out or injured or something, and then
so Claudio gets hurt.
Claudio's gone,
right?
And then to take revenge, he come.
His
was,
friend.
It was at King of Trios, which is, you know, three against three. Mm-hmm. It was a big three against three tournament. And here comes a third ice cream. You know, so it's three ice creams. Very, very weirdly, that third ice cream wears exactly what Claudio was wearing right. at the time. You know, he just has it's an like ice cream.
It's like Dusty Rhodes and the Midnight Rider.
Yeah, but it was like, but like that. I never had a name as ice cream. It was just like, here are Los Ice Creams. And then the three of us come out, and then I do some ice cream stuff, and I take the hood off. And
I do some ice cream stuff.
That sounds great.
Here's though. The lick. He's hitting him with the drip.
You only hear that here. So, and then I take the mask off, I blow a big comeback, and that was it. So I was ice cream for one match, and for whatever reason, on Wikipedia it says, very mysterious Swiss ice cream, and that's a question I always get asked, and it's a funny story.
Well, there you go, and you just also cream. Outed my research skills. I just went on Wikipedia for 5 minutes, and I saw that one. Actually, we should pitch that gimmick to Vince. That's something up his alley. Lost ice cream. Oh, ice creams, bring back Juventude and Super Crazy and Psychosis as Lost Ice Creams. Oh, man. So and now we mentioned, I mean, obviously, back in the WWE, and we talked earlier about how you kind of working your way up the ladder. You had a great match with John Cena a couple of months ago on Raw, and I know that in his Muscle and Fitness, you were in there with him training. Mm-hmm. Do you work with John quite a bit?
Well, what happens is when I was at FCW at that time, which mm-hmm. is NXT now, the trainings program was John opened up his private personal gym for the guys to work out.
Right, it became mandatory almost, right? If you're training,
yeah, it was like
training,
the upper class, yeah, and that's where I met his strength coach, Rob, who mm-hmm. is who worked with all kinds of athletes. He still works with many guys from WWE, but he was a strength trainer at, I want to say, Georgia.
Okay, Georgia Tech or something,
not Georgia Tech, just
university.
The other ones, a university.
Yeah,
something.
I'm from Canada, so okay. Some university in Georgia,
some big university, and I don't even know if it was Georgia. I hope it was. That's how much I paid.
It is now.
But he also trained like Olympic athletes, like shot putters and stuff like that. So like he knows what he's talking.
Very
about.
Well-rounded
very,
trainer.
Very well-rounded trainer. And he knows so much more about working out that I can never like. Mm-hmm. My passion for wrestling is his passion for working out. And so he started, you know, when I got there, I was like, learned like Olympic lifts for the first time because like I never did those, which is like, you know, cleans and snatches and clean and jerks.
And that's John's big thing. He loves doing clean and snatch, right?
Yeah. So like I was like, oh, this is great. It was like I love working out and it's something new and I'm not good at it. It's really hard to do and. I was like, okay, sweet. I started doing that. And then when I got called on the road, I still stayed in contact with Rob and actually had him write my workouts. And mm-hmm. That's what I'm still doing. You know, he's still my trainer.
Right.
And then what basically happened is there's a bunch of guys who like to train like that. For example, Seth Rollins, he's big into CrossFit. And CrossFit has a lot of Olympic lifts. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of their own gyms, which
right.
I go with him because... I don't, you know, some of the big public gyms where it's just they don't have those workout equipment
want.
Yeah, and it's a very to me it's a very motivating atmosphere in those gyms because it's
you're talking about like smaller personal training places. Yeah,
there's nothing really. It's usually it's in a garage, just essential tools, and there's the weight, and everybody's working hard, and mm-hmm. kind of motivates you. And John, you know, likes the same things, likes mm-hmm. Olympic lifts and stuff. So we work out at the same places. But we don't necessarily work out together.
Okay.
But the Muscle and Fitness shoot, he was, he asked me, he was like, hey, are you going to work out at the Performance Center when we have the show? And I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, I work out there all the time. You know,
yeah.
That's my home gym, you know, because I don't, it's right there.
And it's a good gym, right?
It is a very good gym, you know, so I work out there. I didn't even know it was a photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
that's how it worked out.
Yeah.
But you guys did have a great match, and obviously, I mean, it turned out good. And is there some other guys you're looking forward to working with upcoming? Now that you have this kind of new lease on your career.
Well, see, I really look forward to like almost everybody. But mm-hmm. I think I was lucky enough in my first 2 years to work with almost everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys I haven't worked with. Are the ones who are not here full time,
right?
Like Batista, for example, or
which I can see you guys having a hell of a match,
yeah. You know, yeah. Or like Hunter, or you know, Brock,
same thing,
or
Brock,
whoever. Those are the only guys that I haven't been in the ring with. Everybody else, in some way, shape, or form, unless it's like, for example, the Shield. Well, actually, Shield guys since they became babyface, I've been in the ring with the Whites, for example. I haven't yet, but like everybody else, I've been in. in the ring with, I always look forward to being in the ring with, you know what I mean, somebody that's like different, like,
yeah,
you know, like John or Randy or, you know what I mean, like Big Show or Kane. You know, it's just, it's a different challenge every time you step in the ring, and I think that's the beauty.
It's exciting, though, because it is kind of a, I noticed that the night I even text Triple H just the night after WrestleMania was kind of a new chapter, like so many guys coming up, and like, you know, the Shield and Cesaro, and you mentioned some of the other guys that you mentioned, you know, Daniel Bryan, the ascension, mm-hmm, of him. It's a pretty exciting time for fans, because it's kind of the new generation is coming
really
in.
It is very exciting, and even if you look at WrestleMania, it's kind of, it was like, here's the new
changing of the guard. Yeah.
It's just changing of the guard, and Raw was like, all right, mm-hmm, new, and it's a very exciting time, and to me it's like a new excitement.
Yeah, turn the page, right? Yeah,
you can feel, and it's fresh because there's new matchups. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? There's Cena against Daniel Bryan. There's Randy, mm-hmm, against Daniel Bryan. It's me against
Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, there's Cesaro versus Orton.
Yeah,
Cesaro against Orton. Boom! There's a new guy.
How about Cesaro versus Brock? That's a good one.
Well,
yeah, I think so. I like it.
It's just, you know, it's so many new matchups. And, you know, like, you throw the Shield in there, you throw the Wyatts in there, you know.
He's good, too. Yeah. He's another guy I requested to work with was Bray when I did NXT last year.
Yeah.
You guys had a hell of a match with Adrian Neville.
Adrian Neville, yeah.
It's like Decade Neville.
Neville.
You guys had a hell of a match. You, yeah, had a you, really, yeah, great match with him. I remember that.
And it's just, to me, that's the fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a new generation, and it's like you can feel people getting excited again.
That's right.
And that's
because people like it when there's new faces, especially when they're ready. And you guys are ready.
And it's too, it's kind of, I feel like a lot of, and I noticed that when we go to gyms or meet people, they're like, what do you guys do? And they're like, we're like, oh, we wrestle for WWE. And they're like, really? Well, I used to watch wrestling
as
a kid, but then I kind of, and then like they come to the shows and they're like, well, this is awesome,
yeah,
because we know those guys are kind of in the same age group. You know what I mean?
Because the matches are so good,
and
too.
The matches,
you know?
And it's, I mean, been the, you know, like, you always had that, like, exciting physical style.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, a lot more of that.
Sure,
so
everybody's working that way.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, whoa, like, this is good.
Make, yeah.
You know? So, and
it's exciting. Before we wrap up, I got a couple more questions, but what's your... if I had to ask you, like, name your favorite match or a couple of your favorite matches, does a couple of them stand out? It's hard to do, though.
It is hard to do, and I'll always change it.
Okay, which is good.
Which is, but one of my, I always mention Owen against Brett.
From WrestleMania 10?
10, yeah. And then I have a few other go-tos. For example, one that I think is very underrated is Eddie against Brock.
Oh, classic, from the Cow Palace.
From Cow Palace.
Yeah.
Was it Joey Mercury put it on in Developmental one day when we had tape sessions, and it was like, how can I forget about
that
match?
It's a clinic, right?
It's so good.
Yeah.
But there's...
I actually meant a match that you had been
in. Oh, a match I've been.
But I mean...
Oh, well, where to start?
Every one of them?
But it's just... that time, mm-hmm, there were so many, and if you go back, like, there's like matches on Raw and SmackDown with, mm-hmm, like, because, you know, like, it was like you and like Angle and Brock and Eddie, and everybody was, mm-hmm, hot, and Stone Cold, of course, you know, Rock.
You had,
and
like, it was just like 12 to 15 legitimate main event guys that all were hot.
Yeah, and it was just like, there was just, and I'm sure it was the one of like, okay, see if you guys can top that,
yeah,
guys. And then, like, the guys were like, see what they're doing?
Yeah.
Okay, let's.
And there were some
that.
Guys that were not happy about that. But for our guys, it was like, the more the merrier. Let's see who can be better.
And it actually, it kind of started, like, it's still the case now between, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm,
the guys who I was on the independents and everything with, like, we kind of always like, oh, what are you guys doing? Well, you watch. You're like, oh, okay, okay,
bastard.
Now we're going to get you.
You got me,
so,
yeah.
So, it's good, you know? My matches, well, like you said, the one with Cena, the one with Randy,
mm-hmm,
recently. Obviously the one I really enjoyed, the one with you in Japan.
Oh, cool.
You know,
yeah, that was great.
But like, the one I had with Sami Zayn at NXT was very, very well.
The one that was
received.
Just on the pay per view. Yeah,
it was
great.
Arrival.
Great match.
To me, I have matches, and it's not particularly because I watched it back and I think that was.
Oh,
nice,
yeah,
match.
Yeah. No.
It's more of like what it meant to me
of
at
course.
That time. You know, like the Arrival match for me was special on a few reasons. One, it was. A blow-off match of one of my... it was actually a longer feud that I had.
This is the Sami Zayn one?
Sami Zayn 4. It was like There was a longer feud. It was the first long feud I had in WWE, and it was the first match on the network. You know what I mean? So that meant a lot. And then Elimination Chamber, which was my first pay-per-view main event.
From this year?
From this
Yeah, this year, a couple months ago. Were you in the chamber?
When I was in the chamber, yeah. That was like my first WWE pay-per-view main event.
That's cool.
Which is that's just something special.
You don't forget that one, yeah.
No, the one with Cena on Raw, just because it was, the crowd was, it's always like that magic. It needs to be the crowd.
Well, and that was kind of your coming out too, where like, wow, this guy can really go.
Yeah, and I think that was right after I wrestled Randy on SmackDown. Like, I beat Randy on SmackDown, which was a big, like,
shock,
like, oh, wow. And then, like, well, can you do it to Cena? You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing, which I think helped tremendously. And but to me, the goal is always, obviously, and I know it's the same for you, like, okay, what can I do this week?
That's right.
Because you're only as good as your last
match.
That's
right. And they're always watching. They're always watching. All right. So here's the last test. You speak five languages, right?
Oh.
What are they? Italian?
I speak Italian, French.
French.
German.
German.
Swiss.
Swiss. And English. Okay, English, so we know you got your English going on.
Yeah.
Let's do, okay, so it's, tell me in Italian, Chris Jericho smells like bananas.
Can I say it in German?
Okay, you can say that. Okay, fine, that's fine. You got a list here, so you can say it in German.
Chris Jericho smells like banana. Chris Jericho riecht nach Bananen.
Okay, good. You're right. Okay, Italian, this is some good coffee.
C'è bellissimo caffè.
All right, correct. French, I drove here in a Mustang convertible.
Je pense, je conduis ici en, comment dire, cabrio de Mustang, oui.
All right, Swiss. René Lazzarotes wears a cape and has a funny mustache.
De René traait de cape, oder wie sagen wir dem, en omhang und hat a lustige Schnauze.
All right, man. And in English, I want to say to you, thank you for coming today, man. It was a blast. Very cool to have you. And best of luck, man. You're kicking ass, as I always knew you were. I've been one of your biggest fans for a while. Cool. And congratulations on everything that's been going on.
Yeah, thank you. And keep up the good podcast.
Okay, here's how you can win some free Sherry's Berries for yourself. Just tweet the hashtag, I want Sherry's Berries, to @ Talk is Jericho, but you got to spell it right. It's hashtag Sharis Berries. Okay. I'll randomly select five lucky Jerichoholics to win some free giant chocolate dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries. My mouth is watering just talking about them. So hit the Twitter now. Now. Hashtag I want Sherry's Berries to Talk is Jericho and win some tasty treats. All right, let's play the song that everyone is talking about, the new smash hit, the new slab of wax, the new platter that matters. This is Fozzy with Lights Go Out, available now on iTunes, but you're going to hear it free right here on Talk is Jericho.
Just us colliding when the lights go out. We own the-
Lights Go Out, you gave us your opinions last week. You loved it. It's the number one song on iTunes. At least that's my prediction. Let's hope so. All right, I put the number up on the Twitter. At Talk is Jericho. And we now have some calls of people who saw that number. You always got to be paying attention, people. All right, we'll start it off with Kevin in Michigan. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit City, man. Detroit Rock City.
That's it. I actually have a question about your time working with the Showstopper, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that one of your favorite memories working with WWE was at WrestleMania 19, tearing the house down with Shawn. What were some of your other kind of favorite moments with the Showstopper, kind of saying, wow, this guy really is the best of all time and the guy that I really idolize?
Well, I mean, the 19 match was great, and obviously it still holds up to this day. You know, it was the show stealer of WrestleMania 19. I don't care what anybody else says. And I always kind of wish we could have done more. We did, I think, one more match together, but it wasn't really much. I think it was on Raw. But right. 2008, when we had our long angle, that's my favorite memory of Shawn Michaels for sure, because that was originally just supposed to be a one night only thing. I was going to turn on him, and then we were just going to have a match, and that was it. But it organically grew into a 7-month program that, in my opinion, is one of the greatest angles in WWE history. And I write about it quite extensively in my new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, that comes out in October 13th, I believe. And that's kind of one of the cornerstones of the book, is the entire feud. And because I'd forgotten just how good it was. I mean, not how good it was, but how intricate it was until I was writing the book. Then I went online and kind of looked up a timeline for it and just found all the stuff. And it was so wonderfully crafted and put together. And like I said, organic, because it wasn't supposed to be right. That. And whenever people say, you know, what's your favorite match? You gun to head, I'll always say the ladder match from Portland, No Mercy, I believe it was, 2008, where
really?
we had the ladder match for the world title. And the match was beyond anything. It was an amazing match. It was just a classic. But on top of that, it was the storyline that led us to get there, and the fact that we were working for the world title in the main event of a pay-per-view, which was never supposed to be the plan, you know, 7 months earlier when we were just supposed to do this opening, you know, one night only type of a thing. So that's why I love that match and why it's to be my favorite, because the match itself, but it was the storyline behind it and how we got there in the first place.
Was it strange working with his wife, Rebecca?
Not strange, but it was, I guess, pretty crazy what happened, because I was supposed to punch her, but I actually really punched her. You know, we had a little bit of a miscommunication, and I nailed her. I didn't knock her teeth out, but I gave her a fat lip, and she was bleeding, and it was pretty heavy. Like, Sean and I were really kind of disgusted, I guess, at ourselves that it had gone to that point. But, you know, in a couple of days later, she was okay. She didn't lose any teeth. She was fine. And in retrospect, it was the best thing that ever could have happened, because people at that point went from being involved in this match from a entertainment standpoint to being in the match from a guttural emotional standpoint. If anybody ever hit my wife or my daughter or my sister or my aunt or whoever, right, I would kill them. I don't care if it's a show or not. And people, it wasn't like, you know, you had to sell the fact she'd been hit, because you saw it. There was a sound and she went down like a ton of bricks and you could see it. So it was a pretty heavy moment that ended up just kind of taking that whole storyline to the next level.
Interesting. Thanks so much, Chris.
All right, man. Thanks for listening, Kevin. And let's head over to California IA with Ruby. Hi, Ruby.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Where are you calling in California?
Porterville.
All right. Well, what's your question today? Thanks for listening.
You're welcome. I thoroughly enjoyed reading both of your autobiographies and was amazed by how well you wrote them. You're welcome. Have you ever thought, even as a kid or a teen, of writing any sort of fictional novel, such as mystery, suspense, or something like Stephen King?
Well, I mean, yes. I have thought about it. It's just a matter of what exactly could I write about. I had one idea a few years ago that was nothing more than just a kernel of an idea, and I'd actually asked my book agent, you know, if I wanted to write a fictional book, could I? And he was like, well, it depends, and blah, blah, blah. But I think, you know, when my third book comes out, if it's a hit like the first two were, maybe I could write a fictional novel if I decided to. It's just a matter of trying to find the right idea, though.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I appreciate you reading the books. Thank you. The new one comes out in October.
Exactly.
So
already purchased in Amazon.
All right. Well, thank you. So I hope you purchased it through Amazon through Talk is Jericho. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, boy.
Thanks for listening and thanks for checking out the books. And look forward to hearing your feedback in October when book number 3 comes out. All right. Let's head over to Jason from Missouri. What's going on, Jason?
Oh, how you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
First off, I want to say it's kind of a silly thank you, but thank you for actually coming out with a red T-shirt. Because, Bat, you were just talking about that Shawn Michaels angle that you had, and I was there in St. Louis, and everybody, and I was at the corner of the stage, and everybody around me had black T-shirts, except I had yours on, which, you know, that bright red one that you were doing, and my wife goes, well, where were you sitting? And we were watching TV, and I said, you see that red shirt right there? She goes, no way. I said, yep, that's where I was sitting.
So you can see you're like a beacon by wearing that red Chris Jericho shirt.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of like it's kind of like burgundy or something. It was like I remember that one.
Yeah, and actually I wore that shirt because I don't live far from Harley Race's wrestling school, and I go check out his shows.
Okay.
And I actually wore that shirt right before the WrestleMania match you had with Piper and Steamboat when I met Rowdy Piper.
Gotcha.
He actually got a kick out of it.
Cool, man.
Anyways, I was going to talk to you about the new Fozzy single.
Cool.
And I'm kind of digging it, man. I like the speed. I love the tempo. The whole feeling of your songs, it kind of reminds me of what I guess metal's been missing. The speed, the drums, the guitar, without being the vulgarity that, you know, sometimes you get into, and the fact that sometimes you can't understand what in the world these guys are saying. They're just like gargling salt.
We kind of wanted to do something a little different. When you turn on the radio, you do hear a lot of similarities between band. And you know, we didn't calculate to write something like this, but when it came out, I was like, you know, this is like dance metal, dance club metal. Like, you could hear this at a club. Like, they could play, you know, here's the new Beyonce, and here's the new, you know, Lil Wayne, and here's the new Fozzy, and it would all kind of fit. It's got that vibe to it, but yet it's still very heavy.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when I first heard I was kind of hooked by the guitar, and I was like, oh, okay, I kind of like this, but, yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm glad that there are services out there that you can listen to songs, because I'm not big on buying CDs off of one song, but I might have to get the new Fozzy just after hearing the new single.
Well, you can get the single on its own. It's up on iTunes. Lights Go Out is up on iTunes now, because the new record doesn't come out till July. So if you want to just get the song and you like it, you can buy it. And then once you get used to it and you have to hear some more Fozzy or your life depends on it, then you can buy the record. How does that sound? Deal?
Oh, there you go. Sounds good.
All right, man. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate your calls. Thanks for using my Amazon link. Every time you do your online shopping, it's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, and then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, the US, and Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free twice a week. There's no extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process, helping me with gas money. I'm going to give you a ride to the arena to go see the REO Speedwagon show. So you got to chip in for gas. How does that sound? Same thing. All right. I appreciate you being here with me. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. See you next week. And yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.